All right, let's bring in Ray Ferraro here on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. How much truth is in that statement, Ray? Guys that you played with that had no idea who you were playing next, let alone two, three, four games down the road.
I think I just entered a bad cell phone area.
Oh, this is great. Where are you?
I'm in Raleigh, just going from the airport to the hotel. And it actually sounds all right right now, but I think we're about due for a drop-off here. We haven't had one in a while.
Yeah, I think we're long overdue. I'll handle it very professionally. Don't you worry.
Your patience and acceptance really is quite something. I would say 4 to 5 guys a team have no idea what's going on.
Yep.
They just show up and they know where the next game is because it's on the board in the dressing room. It says, you know, flight for wherever is leaving. And other than that, they know they play Tuesday. They know they play Thursday. They know they play Saturday. And they generally don't, in a lot of cases, really know much detail about it. I think they just look at, you know, 2 feet in front of them most of the time. And I heard Noodle say it's probably not a bad thing, but for me, I like to know where we were going to be most of the time. That's just the way I am.
Yeah, I wonder if you asked a coach what he would prefer. A player who's hypersensitive to all of the details and on top of everything and knows right. where you're going 3 weeks down the road, or a guy who just doesn't pay attention to
oblivious.
Anything. Oblivious. Like, what do you think a coach would prefer?
I think they'd like the guy that plays best.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
if... And the reason I say that is some guys, like my personality is I have to know or I feel unsettled. Some guys, if they know too much, it bugs them. So whatever you need to do, just come to the rink and be ready to go, whether it's a practice day. I would say most guys know the amount of games in a time frame. So, okay, we got 7 games in the next 11 days. So they would know that any off day is, man, that's rest and recovery day. They, you know, like the guys would know their schedule like that. But heck, most of the guys, you get an itinerary and the guys are asking after practice, hey, what time's the flight? Like we're on our way to the airport and they're not even really sure what time the plane leaves.
My buddy, one of my best friends, coached a major junior team and he had an 18-year-old. He said he was sitting at his desk at 2:00 in the afternoon. And an 18-year-old walks through the door and says, where's the rest of the team? Like, am I on time for practice? And he goes, hey, idiot, we have a game tonight. Like, the guy thought he was showing up for practice, and they were playing that night.
Well, let's not call them idiots. There is rumblings out of Edmonton. Our dear friend Pat Quinn walked in his suit and said, guys, the team we're playing tonight's really going to forecheck hard. And one of the Oilers put up their hand and said, Pat, we don't play today. We don't play today.
It's not good.
See, that's a step ahead of the game right there.
Yeah, Pat's overprepared. Yeah, I'll take that every day of the week. As opposed to underprepared.
And isn't there an anniversary? Didn't he pass away 3 years yeah. ago today?
3 years ago today, the great Pat Quinn.
We should have a few Pat Quinn stories throughout the afternoon.
I would say when he was coaching the Leafs, like when he would stand behind the bench, he was one of the maybe 3 or 4 guys that made me unsettled because he was so big. And he was always kind of like, looked like he was going to chew somebody's head off. Keenan bothered me. He made me a little uneasy. Pat really did. Pat Burns did. But like when they were there, I kind of found things a little uncertain.
Yeah, Pat Quinn had a presence to him that was, he was a grizzly bear behind the bench. Yeah. I mean, the guy he was a monster.
With a short fuse, too. Like,
yeah.
Especially on the refs. I want to say I remember him booing the ref one time. Like, you're brutal. Boo!
Dan O'Halloran, you're a coward. Always have been. That's what he would always follow
That's
up
my
with.
Best.
Always have been.
Always have been. Yeah, he was a beauty.
If you've never seen the video of him almost decapitating Bobby Orr in the Boston Garden way back when Orr was a youngster, oh my gosh, you got to watch it. You can't believe the run he takes at him. And it turned into, like, it looked like World War III was going to break out.
Oh, yeah, it was a full riot.
He hit him at the blue line, but I think he came from the red line. And it was a savage hit.
Oh, no helmets. No one had a helmet on. Like, that's the thing about Pat Quinn. He's, you know, Mike Keenan. I've never seen game tape of Mike Keenan. Pat Burns didn't play. Quinn, you're like, that guy played and killed people, like, when he played. Like, he killed people. So you hear stories. Like, I used to hear stories about him growing up in Hamilton. And it's like gangs of New York. Gangs of Hamilton led by Pat Quinn. Like, just hysterical. I still wouldn't mess with that guy.
No.
He was the best.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of runs, you know, we haven't really brought up the Nazem Kadri stuff from last night, and there's been a couple of examples of his short fuse being on display Saturday against Montreal and last night as well.
First off, last night, do you know why he didn't get the call against Ekblad? Do you know why he didn't get the call in
reputation.
The corner?
Well, the refs
down all the time.
The refs can't stand it.
You think if that happened to Austin Matthews, Ekblad cross-checked Austin Matthews off that, he's going to the box.
Because I thought it was a penalty.
Absolutely.
A penalty on Nazem. It was a penalty on him.
But when you
him,
go down
sure.
that much, you're putting doubt. The referees have doubt in their mind.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, they're looking for the retaliatory thing. And the thing in the penalty box.
The worst part.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Ray.
The worst thing about that is, you know, it's not like the officials don't talk or don't see. So he's lying on the ice for 10 seconds. And then he stays in the play. Like, they're well aware of what's going on. They're like, nope, no chance. Next mm-hmm. time, no chance. And so he would be, I see a little of myself in that. That there's a reason the officials don't give you the breaks. And he draws a pile of penalties, too. It's not like he doesn't.
Yeah, he does.
Doesn't get any. I used to bitch and complain all the time, and so after a while, you know, they'd go like, oh, shut it. Zip it. And you know they do the same thing when he's lying down, when he gets cross-checked. You're right, that's a penalty on most other guys, but they look at it and they're like, oh, just go pick up your stick and let's continue the play.
Well, and I thought the cross-check he handed out was pretty weak.
Yeah,
really.
It wasn't nothing. It wasn't a killer cross check.
No.
You give him a good push, and then the biggest hit was the guy in the penalty box with
Dale Talon lookalike that took the butt end right
that
in
guy
his
got
nose.
A butt end in the yeah. But I'll give him credit. He went right after Kadri.
He did not back down. That was pretty interesting. I've had those guys who are generally pretty good guys say to me as I've been screaming and yelling and slamming the door, are you finished? Would you like? There's nothing worse than, you're 23 years old and a 60-year-old guy says, you want a drink of water now? You just feel like a donkey.
Well,
yeah, that guy, he treated Kadri like it was like preschool, like it was like a daycare
I'm glad he did that in the sense that he didn't show up with a neck brace and something today and all of a sudden was like, I'm suing.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because who knows in the landscape of today, this guy drops and realizes this guy makes $5 million a year.
Oh, yeah. Celino
you never know
when
something stupid can happen. Like the other day, Brendan Gallagher smashed a stick across the post and there was somebody skating right behind the net. The blade of the stick could easily... Like,
yeah.
Jamie witnessed the worst one of all. Al MacInnis slashed his stick on top of the boards after a goal against.
Yeah.
And Darren Turcotte's glove was off and his hand was hanging on the bench.
That was a foot away from me.
Yeah. And he broke his hand. Al MacInnis was sick to his stomach.
Al saw that hit Turcotte's hand. He jumped over the boards, ran down the aisleway, and threw up because he was so sick that he had hurt a teammate out of frustration. And it was a frustration play. It was an accident. He didn't mean to do it.
But like you said though, like Turcotte's not going to sue MacInnis.
No.
That,
but like,
that cat last night, yeah. Like Celino and Barnes are flying down to Miami, and
this guy's got a neck brace on.
The first guy ever to break his neck from a butt end to the face. It's, you know.
Hey, do you guys remember when the guy tumbled into the penalty box in Philly when Domi was in there?
Yep. That was one of the greatest things. And I'm still mad that Kevin Collins jumped in there, because I think that guy would still be laying there if Domi was able to continue to punch away at him.
Yeah, that might not have turned out so well. That was pretty amazing stuff. The fact that he didn't was astounding.
No fan in history has taken a bigger beating than in Buffalo, the guy that jumped into the bench, and Rob Ray planted like 25 bombs on
easily.
His head.
That was in Quebec.
Oh, it was in Quebec. Okay.
I'm going to watch that on YouTube again. That is a beating like you've never seen. Like,
Rob Ray is pummeling him.
Pummeling. And it was almost like the teammates were holding him in place. And just, he was just going to town.
Yeah.
There was nothing that guy could do. But why was he on the ice anyway?
He's an idiot. Exactly. Don't jump on the ice. If you take a beating, it's your own fault. But, you know, as for Kadri and his reactions, and I like a player on the edge. I like a guy who responds and gets pissed off. I don't want to necessarily see that scaled back, but I would like to see it be selective from time to time. And, Ray, you and I, we were going back and forth last night. That's a situation, considering when it is in the game, he skated right by the Leafs bench. I think Babcock's got to yell on him, get off the ice. You can't trust him in that situation.
Right.
I would.
He's gone so hot by that time.
He's crazy. Like, Babcock should have got him off the ice.
Across. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
That's not the first time, and it won't be the last time for him. But the funny part is, like, as soon as he gets sour, that's when he plays best.
Right.
Like, when he gets on the edges of the game and, you know, he's a night he doesn't really have his legs, that's when he's more involved, that's when he's the best.
And that's why you can't
take the penalties he took.
Yeah, you got to be careful with scaling it back because of that. You know, when he's involved and engaged.
You need him to play that edgy game, for sure. Because when he's not edgy and playing a safe game, he's not as effective. It's just, the hardest part is, if you play in that gray area, and we all know, like, he's a gray area player, but it bites you sometimes. And the problem now is the reputation's there, so he's actually going to have to take a little bit more of a beating to get certain refs to give him that call, quite honestly. And Tyson Nash is a good friend of ours. Nasher said the more experienced he got in the league, he felt he had to take more punches to the face and more abuse because the refs knew his act. And I see Nazem kind of in that. Now, Nazem's a better player and all of that, but he needs to play edgy. But when he gets involved in that stuff, he is going to take a beating to get a call instead of before. Maybe he wouldn't have had to.
Well,
the story becomes about what happened in the penalty box, but really the time of the penalty and the type of penalty is really what's in the bigger picture is the most important stuff. And that's, I'm sure they have a talk with them today, or you don't even have to have a big talk, but you gotta tell them. You can't do that.
Yeah.
What do you make of this Matthews Marner connection? I mean, earlier in the week, obviously Babcock, he turned on it quickly after the game in Montreal. He was almost insulted by anyone insinuating they'd stick together. And now all of a sudden, they're starting games together. They're playing the whole game together. He doesn't know what he's going to do tomorrow night, but do you expect them to stick together, and would you have them play together?
I do think they're going to stick together. It does feel kind of odd, like, you know, like Matthews and Nylander have broke up. Like, they were a couple for a year, and now they've broken up, and you know, there's a new winger here, and so Nylander's getting bounced all over the lineup. At some point, you've got to find the best point for all of the players, and really, I think that's what Babcock talks about. And you know, we're all kind of focused on one or two things, and he's trying to focus on the entire team and whatever gives them the best chance that night. I mean, it looks like Martin's out of the lineup. Well, Carolina doesn't have anybody for Martin to really be in the lineup for. So you take him out and you put another guy that can skate or another guy of that style of play against Carolina. So I don't know if it'll be a long-term thing. I mean, how would you know? It seems like he's going more with his, like, more of a gut feel this year as opposed to just rolling out the same nine guys in the order that he did last year. That doesn't seem like it's going to be the way.
Quickly, Ray, we know that I'm just waiting for the phone to drop. I've been anxious for 15 minutes.
I'm at the hotel now.
Okay, you're good.
At the hotel. I had to step out of the cab because the guy just gave me the old, hey, my machine doesn't work, and I don't have any cash. I'm like, so I go, what do you want me to do about it? And he says, well, the credit card doesn't work. I go, and I have no cash, right? I had the phone on mute while you were rambling away there, Hayes, and I was... Every time he said that the machine didn't work, I say, I got no cash. Like, what do you want me to do? Can't pull it out of my ear. We've got a dilemma.
Yeah, that's like an Abbott and Costello bit. Who's going to win in the end?
Yeah, well, if the machine doesn't work...
I'm going to win.
You're going to win because you got no cash.
Like, what am I going to do? So, I guess I could go to the ATM and spend $4 to pay the guy. And so, really, that comes, you know... Which I probably will do, because otherwise you're just being a jackass. But it's not really my problem. That's what I got to say about the whole deal here. Because I think they scam us, Noodles. Yeah. Noodles, what do you think? The early morning cab ride, and they go, oh, no change. Oh, yeah. Really?
Okay. Well, then, you know,
bad break.
I try to be polite as possible in the early morning, but... When the machine doesn't work, they should let you know the minute you get in the cab and say, hey, this is a cash fare because my machine's not working. Not, hey, I want to pocket the cash once we're at the airport. You know, all of a sudden the machine's not working. I see when you pull out your money clip, you've got cash there. I'll just take the cash. And I'll say, no, I'm saving that for breakfast. You can take the credit card.
That cost them something, man. I just went through that whole routine for a month.
It's unfortunate, but that's where the customer is always right. If you want to pay with a credit card,
you're paying with a credit card.
Like that's you don't. I always try and tip generously because I believe that, you know, people work hard for their money. But if I feel like there's a scam or this guy's looking to pocket something, I dial down my tip. I'm usually a 20%.
I'm with you, Noodles. He could have told me at the airport. And then I would have known when I got here, and I would have had to, or not gotten the car and gotten the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I still don't have any cash. Not like I'm making it up. Ask Gord. Next time you talk to Gord or CC, ask him if I ever have cash. The answer is never.
I know. I've heard that rumor before.
Yes, I bet you have.
Your reputation precedes you. We're well aware. Ottawa losing again last night. Matt Duchene. This guy is going Joe Namath here. He is struggling.
Cold as ice
right
now. No
points, like -6 or -8.
And it's not like you're saying he's all around the net or...
Well, he had 20 shots on goal, was it right?
Who cares?
Well, I mean, 20 shots on goal in 4 games, that's pretty good, is it not? Like, if I said Austin Matthews had 20 shots on goal in 4 games, he'd probably have 7 goals.
Last night.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, you got to look at the 20, right?
Yeah,
you got to look at the 20 shots. Are they a couple of muffins from the blue line? Or are they
a couple
real
years
chances?
Ago, Kadri had a zillion shots on net, too, but they were flick shots from the blue line.
It is true.
Here's the one thing that concerns me, two things that concern me about Duchene, and I think I said it when the trade was made, but concerned me then, concerns me now. I don't know what position he is because he's been, it seems like, over the last couple of years, most productive on the wing. You know, that's not what they acquired him to be. And secondly, he finished the year, I know under tough circumstances, but he finished last year with 3 goals in 41 games. He didn't get a sniff at the World Championship. And so I would be concerned about that. They gave up a lot for him. And, you know, they come back from Europe. They haven't done a thing since they've gotten back. And, I'm not real sure where the connection is for him. Is it Bobby Ryan who doesn't have a point? Is it going to have to be? Does it change when Zach Smith comes back? But the Senators are stuck because they need production. If they don't get production from him, they're beyond screwed. I mean, they just don't have enough. And how could you? I mean, you traded Turris. This is your number one center. I'm not even sure he's a center or a comfortable center. Maybe he is, but the results haven't been so good.
No, that's an understatement. All right, buddy. Enjoy it down there in Carolina, and we'll do it again tomorrow.
And if you call in 10 minutes, I'll still be sorting out this cab. So,
You sound like you're actually not as flustered as I expect you to be in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, this has a potential to go. This could be a Kadri penalty box situation here.
Watch yourself. There's always cameras.
And this guy will definitely come up with a neck brace.
Oh, yeah.
You bet he will. We'll get her sorted out. We'll talk to you tomorrow, boys.
All right, buddy. There's Ray Ferraro on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. For fast approvals and competitive payment options on heavy equipment from any dealer, visit valiantfinancial.ca.